The following presentation by David Hunt describes the relationship of evolution to scientism and the occult. Now, unfortunately, the audio quality is somewhat meager, but we think the program is worth the extra effort. So now let's get right into the program.
How do you do? And you people are all experts on evolution, and you know all the reasons why it's not true. So I'm not going to tell you much about that. I'm going to maybe give you a little different angle on evolution than you've ever had, which I think is the approach you really need to take to evolution, because evolution is not science, it's a religion. And it hasn't been around couple hundred years, it's been around for thousands of years, actually. Thousands and thousands of years. And when scientists began 150 or 200 years ago to try to find fossil evidence to prove evolution, it was one of the early indications that science was returning to its roots in occultism and mysticism. Which is where science began. I'm sure you all recognize, or most of you anyway, science began in alchemy and astrology and in mysticism. And science is indeed returning to its roots there. Now, when Galileo was summoned by Pope Paul V to the Inquisition in Rome, you know, and he stood there before the priests and he kowtowed to them and he admitted that he was wrong in saying that the earth is not the center of the universe and that his scientific discovery was not true and that the church was right. That was the beginning of a battle that followed down through the centuries, and you know who won that battle. It was the scientists who won, who came out on top. And they are the new priests, if you're not aware of that. The scientists are the priests of today. And they make their pronouncements ex cathedra, their dogmatic pronouncements, and woe betide anyone who disagrees. And the most scathing ridicule that you can level against anyone is, you are not being scientific. And who is it that decides what is science and who is scientific but the scientists themselves? It was Aldous Huxley who said science, and he's not on our side by any means, but Aldous Huxley admitted, he said, science is the opinion of professors XYZ at a given time. And you need to remember that scientists are just boys and girls who grew up and got degrees after their names and began to make certain pronouncements and so forth. But you cannot appeal to the facts, because the facts must be interpreted within a framework of reference. And if you come from a basically atheistic frame of reference, and you are determined not to admit that God exists, then you're going to interpret the facts in a certain way. And this is what I call scientism, the religion of scientism. I don't know, I would recommend a book to you if you haven't read it, Idols for Destruction. How many of you have read Idols for Destruction? By Herbert Schlossberg, his historian. And Dr. Schlossberg in that book talks about what he calls an arrogant scientism that made pronouncements far beyond the evidence at its disposal. And he says the scientific scabbards fall away to reveal ideological swords. In other words, they have an axe to grind. And they have certain opinions that they are going to push regardless. And they try then to marshal the evidence to support it. Now, as I said, I'm sure I can't tell you anything in this particular area. But let me just maybe give you a few quotes that you might find interesting if you're not familiar with them. So anyway, what happened is that the scientists are the priests. And if there's an inquisition, you get called before them now. And they decide, and you get excommunicated from academia. And you get the rug pulled out from under you of academic respect. And you have to be very careful what you say, because you will no longer be a member of the club. And that is why creationism cannot be taught in our schools today, because they say it is not scientific. And they are the ones who decide what is and what is not scientific. And they have their own little club that they run. And they are in control. But that doesn't mean that they're right. And many of their own members are beginning to speak out. And you can find this evidence all the time. C.S. Lewis said, the whole vast, I'm quoting him now, the whole vast structure of modern naturalism seems to depend not on positive evidence, but simply on an a priori metaphysical prejudice, and is devised not to get in facts, but to keep out God. Okay? And that is, in fact, the way the thing goes. Now, you think that many of these scientists are atheists. In fact, they are not atheists, they are polytheists. Well, that startles you. Robert Jastrow, one of the leading astronomers of our day, if you took astronomy in university, you'd probably get one of his textbooks. And Robert Jastrow says, why, evolution could have been going on planets out there maybe 10 billion years longer than on planet Earth. And those beings would be as far beyond man as man is beyond a worm. And he says, when we meet them, they will have all the attributes of God. Omnipotence and omniscience, and they will seem like gods to us. They will be so far beyond, and we will fall down and worship them. So, even the atheistic materialist has his gods. You saw them, those of you that saw the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Any of you remember that film? And the gods that put us here, well, who put them there? And who put them there, you know, and so forth. And with their fantastic technology, they can even bring back planes that disappeared in World War II, and the engines will kick right over, and the gas is good, and they bring back the missing flyers, and I mean, they can do incredible things. And you saw them when they walked out of that UFO. They were thinly demonic-looking creatures. Okay. You've got it in an interesting book by Arthur C. Clarke. How many of you saw the film 2010? You're interested in science. 2000, very interesting film. And you remember in that film when that sun burst into existence out of the sky, and it brought peace to planet Earth. The Soviets and the Americans were about to engage in nuclear holocaust, and the arrival of this new sun in the sky brought peace to the earth. But what the film didn't tell you, which the book does tell you, you know the name of that sun? Lucifer. Right. Very interesting. And in Arthur C. Clarke's book, Childhood's End, how many of you have read that one? Yeah, in Childhood's End, you know, a UFO settles over each of the capitals of the world and imposes peace upon this world. But those creatures don't let the humans see them. And the humans work out a trick whereby they manage to get a glimpse of who they are. And what do you think they look like? Demons! And of course they have an explanation for that. These demonic creatures who are the agents of the overlord of the universe, you know, overseeing the evolution of the species, and we have arrived at this point now where they're ready to take a direct hand in our evolution. They say, well, you have had a premonition of this in your collective unconscious, and you have been afraid, and that is why you have made up this idea that demons are evil. But we're actually good guys. Okay? And what happens is a metamorphosis. Talk about a generation gap. You get a real generation gap in the story, and a metamorphosis begins to take place. And the children develop psychic powers. This is what I call childhood then. And they develop a collective consciousness. And as the old folks die off, they evolve. And finally they leave planet Earth to merge into the overmind of the universe. And the world is destroyed. It's the next step in the evolutionary process. Scientists have their gods. And their gods are made by an evolutionary process. And that indeed is the ultimate goal of all life. Ever upwards, better and better, you know. Well, you know where it ends. Teilhard de Chardin talked about it. We are evolving through the... But by the way, he was one of the co-discoverers of Piltdown Man. I don't need to tell you about that. But anyway, we are evolving through the noosphere and the theosphere, and we finally merge into godhood. At the omega point. And I could name, you know, numbers of new age organizations, networks of networks around this world who are talking about the human race taking a quantum leap in the evolutionary process. They're talking about a transformation that is about to take place on planet Earth, and a new species will be created. You see, in the fossil record, there are gaps. A species disappears and suddenly here's a new species, and they say it's going to happen to the human species. And there is a species that will disappear, and you know who those guys are? That's the fundamentalists. And they are going to be either eliminated, a bloodbath, we're going to help evolution out a little bit, and a new species will appear on planet Earth called Homo noeticus. Right. And you remember when Edgar Mitchell, commander of Apollo 14, sixth man to walk the moon, on Apollo 14 he had a mystical experience of unity consciousness where he saw himself as the universe. And it so transformed his life that when he came back to planet Earth he abandoned the outer space program to join the inner space program, which is the new frontier of modern science. And he founded the Institute of Noetic Sciences, south of San Francisco. Now, you could take an organization like Planetary Initiative for the World We Choose, which came out of the United Nations, and their logo is the Earth with the Omega around it. Okay? Signifying that evolutionary step that we are all about to take. And there are, I could name Nobel Prize winners, Brian Josephson, for example, Nobel Prize in 73 in physics, who literally believes he's going to explore the entire physical universe by looking within himself through yoga. And he is staking his international reputation upon it. And he's got good scientific reasons for this. They tell us that soon in our theaters the action will not be confined to the big screen, but you will have three-dimensional images running up and down the aisles and all over the theater. Fantastic action. You saw some primitive ones in Star Wars. And they are called holograms. And the interesting thing about a hologram is So no matter how finely you cut it up into smaller and smaller pieces, although the resolution becomes distorted, you, each little piece has the whole picture. It's like a single cell in the human body. Any cell in the human body has the entire DNA for replicating the complete, for replicating the complete human being. And this is why, theoretically, you can clone a human being from any cell in the body. Okay, then what could be more logical than for these scientists to say that each of us is a little hologram of the universe? Okay? The universe is a hologram. Our brain is a hologram. Everything is a hologram. And we're little holograms of this whole hologram, and therefore we have within us everything that's in the whole thing, only in miniature form. Therefore, we're God. And we know everything, past, present, and future, and all power. This is the human potential movement. Human potential is infinite and is within us. And this is, believe it or not, where evolution has been, what it's been talking about for thousands and thousands of years, and our scientists are still talking about it. You don't just get it in science fiction. But I wanted to give you a few quotes from some of the scientists who become a bit disillusioned before we talk more about mysticism. Now, you could go to San Francisco, for example, and you could, in San Francisco, there's an organization called the Institute for Conscious Evolution. Okay? Are you aware of this? You see, we have reached the point now in the evolutionary process where we can begin to direct our own evolution. And we're going to take a quantum leap, and we're not going to sprout wings. It's not going to be a physical thing. It's going to be to a higher consciousness. It's a step upwards to Godhood, you see. And so the Institute of Conscious Evolution, in fact, has a counseling center in San Francisco called the Conscious Evolution Counseling Center. They have courses. You can get a master's degree or a PhD in conscious evolution. And they don't even know what conscious evolution is. But you can get a PhD in it. They recently got they're getting government grants for studying this sort of thing. And they have a bizarre blend of Darwinism and Freudianism in their therapy sessions. And I'll mention that a little bit more in a moment. Now, Colin Patterson, senior paleontologist at the British Museum of Natural History, has said, quote, "Statements about ancestry of species are not applicable in the fossil record, but are made up stories, no part of science." Dr. Patterson said, quote, "Evolutionists, like the creationists they periodically do battle with, are nothing more than believers themselves. They have a faith. They have a religion. It's scientism." Dr. Patterson says, quote, "I had been working on this stuff, evolution, for more than 20 years, and there was not one thing I knew that was true about it." He said, "It's quite a shock to learn that one can be so misled for so long." This is a senior paleontologist at the Natural History Museum in London. I don't know if you're familiar with D.M.S. Watson. I call him Sagan the Pagan of Great Britain. He has had a program on BBC over there, like Carl Sagan has had on public service television over here. And in a speech to some of his fellow biologists, he said this, quote, "Evolution itself is accepted by zoologists not because it has been observed to occur or can be proved by logically coherent evidence to be true, but because the only alternative, special creation, is clearly incredible." And by that he means unacceptable. we won't accept it. Now, I mentioned Dr. Jastrow, Robert Jastrow. He's director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. And at the 144th National Conference of the Association for the Advancement of Science, there were about 800 fellow scientists there. And though he's a professed agnostic, Dr. Jastrow had this to say. He said, quote, "Astronomers are curiously upset by proof that the universe had a beginning. Their reactions," he said, "provide an interesting demonstration of the response of the scientific mind, supposedly a very objective mind, when evidence uncovered by science itself leads to a conflict with the articles of faith in their profession." There is a kind of religion in science, a faith that every event can be explained as the product of some previous event. This conviction is violated by the discovery that the world had a beginning under conditions in which the known laws of physics are not valid. The scientist has lost control. If he really examined the implications, he would be traumatized. As usual, when the mind is faced with trauma, it reacts by ignoring the implications. This is Dr. Jastrow addressing the National, the Association for the Advancement of Science. Unfortunately, and I don't want to get off on this, but it's the subject of my new book that should be coming out soon, called The Seduction of Christianity. Unfortunately, these ideas have come heavily within the Church of Jesus Christ. Not just theistic or deistic evolution, but the whole mysticism that I want to talk about now. And let me give you a quote from someone that might startle you. I don't know if we have any Presbyterians here tonight. I don't want to upset any Presbyterians. But maybe if you're a Presbyterian, you would be familiar perhaps with the fact that the five-year evangelism plan, program, that was just adopted in Dallas in January for the Presbyterian Church is called A New Age Dawning. And on every page in that brochure, the dawning of a new age, what we need to do in the new age, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to get too far afield, but since, are we in Garden Grove? I have a tape. Last time I was at the headquarters of Unity Church in Lee Summit, Missouri. Again, I don't want to offend any of you people. I hope you won't get up and walk out and hear me out. But if you know anything about unity, they deny everything in the Bible. They're into reincarnation and mysticism, the whole yoga, the whole trip. I have a tape of Robert Schuller addressing the ministers and ministers in training at Unity headquarters, speaking to them like we're all part of the same positive possibility thinkers club, which indeed they are, and encouraging them and how to church growth and how to spread their gospel better and so forth. And in the question and answer time, a very interesting question was asked. Dr. Schuller, we hear a lot about the New Age movement these days. And then the person spelled it out, holistic medicine, and went into all the details and said, of which we are all a part. And Dr. Schuller, in your opinion, what is the function of a minister in the New Age? He didn't skip a beat. He didn't deny he'd ever heard of the New Age movement. He denied that he was part of it. He said, in this age, he didn't say New Age, but he said in this age, and they had spelled out what age they were talking about, the function of a minister is to positivize religion. Now, he said, that's very easy for you people here. Being unity people, you're already very positive. But you understand that I deal with people that you would even call fundamentalists. And they use terms like sin and guilt and repentance and redemption, and I have to positivize that. Now, you can come to your own conclusions about that, whatever he meant by that. Bruce Larson he was the keynote speaker, if not the keynote speaker, one of the keynote speakers at the conference in January in Dallas of the Presbyterian Church USA. And I've shown, you know, I've asked Presbyterians, well, what about this thing? I mean, the dawning of a new age. Well, they just picked up, you know, terminology, and it doesn't really mean anything, and so forth. Bruce Larson has had this to say, and it's apropos to our subject tonight. I had and have now a growing belief that we are in the beginning of an exciting new age. Now, he's supposed to be an evangelical leader. A new age which I believe is already imminent and will change life for all people upon this globe. Inner space and interspace will become just as important, if not more important, than outer space. Mine is not an isolated hope. Carl Jung stated that in Jesus Christ there is made possible a new rung on the ladder of evolution. Pierre Teilhard de Chardin talks about his dream for the evolution of a new being and a new society. My dream is that we're on the verge of such a discovery. I'm trying to tell you folks tonight that there are things about evolution that maybe, although you've been studying it, you're not aware of what evolution really is. You see, evolution is the vehicle for karma and reincarnation. It always has been. There is an evolutionary process that has been going on, and the mystics and the occultists have talked about it for thousands of years. And every species has its avatar. Rats have their avatars. You know, little birds have their avatars. Every species has its savior, its Christ, that is leading that species into the next step, upward and upward and upward. And yoga, the goal of yoga for thousands of years, has been to take the final step in this evolutionary process. The caste system in India is part of evolution. You have to grow from one caste to the next caste to the next caste. Let me give it to you in a nutshell. Let's take Scientology, okay? Scientology you've all heard of, I'm sure. Scientology is a religious cult. It denied that to begin with, denied it was religion, and now it has admitted that. All right, in Scientology teaches this. We are all Satans, T-H-E-T-A-N-S, Satan. Somebody says that, Satan with a lisp. And that's what it is. We are all uncreated, omnipotent, omniscient Satans. And we created this MEST, matter, energy, space, time, continuum in which we function. And we then created little creatures in it. And we became so intrigued with our creation that we incarnated these little creatures. And as they died and evolved, you know, as these species evolved through higher and higher species, we reincarnated. And we reincarnated and reincarnated, and finally, by the time we reached in the evolutionary process the status of human beings, we were so far removed from our origin as Satan that we forgot who we are. And so Scientology offers to connect you up with an e-meter. And they call it, and you go through a psychotherapeutic process that's mixed in with Zen Buddhism and various forms of mysticism, and you finally peel off the engrams, they're called, the traumas that you picked up in prior lives, and you break through to clear and beyond, and you realize who you are. We're Satans. We're beyond the limitations of space, time, and matter. I mean, we're just kind of playing a game, you know. This is mysticism. That's not a new invention of L. Ron Hubbard, but this has been in there for thousands of years. Now, let's get really bizarre. How many of you would be familiar with Gene Houston? Well, Gene Houston is a graduate of Union Theological Seminary. She has degrees, both in, PhDs, both in theology and psychology. And she is considered to be one of the most brilliant women in the world today, the successor of Margaret Mead, etc., etc., etc. Okay? Jean Houston puts on some rather interesting seminars. She's the author of a number of books. She's put on seminars for over 250,000 people. Now that's not nothing, you know. She's a very influential woman. And thank you very much. Appreciate that. That's fine. That'll do me, I think. Here's a reporter, Shepherd Bliss, who attended one of her seminars. And let me just read you a few excerpts of what he said. "Remember when you were a fish," Houston suggested in Sacramento. Nearly 1,000 people in the large room at the state fairgrounds dropped to the floor and began moving their fins as if to propel themselves through water. "Notice your perceptions as you roll like a fish. How does your world look, feel, sound, smell, taste? Then you came up on land," Houston recalled, "taking us through the amphibian stage." You know what's happened, folks. I don't want to get sidetracked and go into too many details. But I'm sorry if we got some psychologists here tonight. I mean, you're off on a trip, folks. You know, Freud gave us the myth of the unconscious and psychic determinism. And that by the time you were 5 years old, your experiences in childhood had made you what you are. Okay? And Freud's myth of childhood that says you are what your prior years have made you was simply a watered-down, westernized version of karma and reincarnation that says you are what your prior lives have made you. Okay? And indeed now, our psychologists are not only regressing us into the womb, and you've got Christians doing this in inner healing and healing of the memories. It's called rebirthing out there in the world. And in spite of the scientific fact that the myelin sheathing in the brain of the prenatal, natal, and early postnatal infant is not sufficiently developed to carry memories, people come out with memories of what the doctor said, and who was there, and so forth. Memories that do not exist in the brain, okay? And you have people like, I don't want to step on any of your favorite friends, but like Dennis and Rita Bennett, for example. And that is the main part of their inner healing and healing of the memories, is what happened in the womb. Now, the man who brought this to us was Stanislav Grof, a psychologist who just made a fantastic, I mean, I'm sorry if I sound a little sarcastic, but he made a terrific discovery. He discovered that when he gave LSD to schizophrenics, they came out with spontaneous memories of what had happened to them in the womb. And that was the cause of all of their problems. Freud's theories and Jung's theories about the past and the childhood and everything were brought out of patients under hypnosis. And hypnosis is right out in the pit of hell. And hypnosis now, which used to be the darling of crime detection in California, has now been outlawed by the Supreme Court of the state of California. They will not let anyone testify in court who's been hypnotized. Because we now know that after you've once been hypnotized, you can never, ever thereafter differentiate between a true memory of what happened and what may have been wittingly or unwittingly implanted by the hypnotist in the process. I don't want to get off on that. But I'm telling you that the theories of Freud and of Jung came out under hypnosis, which is a primary mode of demonic deception. Okay? And now Stanislav Grof gives it to us under LSD. Jean Houston was the first person to get government grants for therapy with LSD. Okay? But the man who founded the Graduate School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary was given the Kentucky Colonel Award for his work with LSD and so forth. So we got a problem, folks, with intermingling we have accepted within the church pseudoscience and scientism, and it is not scientific at all. Okay? So, they're not only talking about rebirthing you and putting you into the womb, but under hypnosis, you can be regressed right back into prior lives, where you come out with factual data of some life you lived in a little village in India, and you can even tell where the women washed their clothes and where the path led through the over to the next village, and you've never been there. It's demonic. The demons have been there, and they know. And now we've got our so-called scientists, our psychiatrists, not only regressing people into the childhood and then into the womb and then into prior lives, but back into prior species, okay, to come out with those memories that are built right into the DNA and of your past. And finally, you remember when you were part of some great star system and you were just hydrogen atoms and so forth. So, she says, this is all very serious stuff, folks. I hope you understand that. She says, allow yourself, then Houston suggested, allow yourself to fully remember being a reptile. Notice how your environment is changing. Let those early memories rise to consciousness. Then some of you flew. Others climbed trees. Our bellies rose off the floor. We began crawling on all fours. We began to use sound deliberately to communicate and for pleasure. Playfulness and curiosity grew. Some of us stood erect. We became a zoo of sounds and movements made by early mammals, monkeys, and apes. Can you imagine human beings going through this sort of thing? Houston then called us to remember being the early human who loses his or her protective furry covering and stands on 2 feet, vulnerable, inventive, and adaptable. The climax of the already intense exercise that had taken us more than an hour followed. Now I want you to extend yourselves even further into your ideal. Allow yourself to move fully into the next stage of your own evolution. We became a room of leaping, joyous, sometimes alone, often together human beings who eventually joined hands and voices. The impact was electric, says the enthusiastic reporter. Fantastic! The transformation of consciousness with this rock. Now, I read that, there's more, but I read that to read this to you. Encouraged by Margaret Mead, Houston began attending governmental conferences. In 1979, she helped initiate and chair a symposium for leading U.S. government policymakers entitled The Possible Society, an Exploration of Practical Policy Alternatives for the Decade Ahead. I brought in my friend Hazel Henderson and George Leonard, she says, and we got together about 150 extremely high-ranking government officials for about 3 days. We started by giving speeches, and then Houston laughed. We had these officials on the floor guiding them into internal journeys, etc. She got these 150 extremely high-level government officials all going back, remembering when they were reptiles, etc., etc. And they call that science. And they laugh at us for believing in God. You know, it reminds me, I was on a talk show and my host was a Jewish former attorney atheist who loved to chop his guests in little pieces. We had a great discussion and he laughed at me for believing in God. And I said, don't laugh at me for believing in God. You believe in yourself. At least my God is worth believing in. And in fact, I got him to admit that he was God. That is where it lies. And I said, Alan, tell me, if you're God, why do you spend so much time and money with your psychiatrist? Which I knew he did. Oh, he said, he helps me get in touch with myself. You got to be kidding. You are God, and you got to have help getting in touch with yourself. If it's really you who are, you out of touch. I mean, this is incredible. And it passes for science. I'm trying to tell you that evolution is at the heart of a lie that was given to the human race in the Garden of Eden when Satan said, you can become like the gods. And man has been pursuing that ever since. Just to give you another example, I don't know how many of you have read the book The God Makers, but we have over 600 footnotes in there, an expose of the Mormon Church. And you know that on June 8, 1873, speaking in the Mormon Tabernacle in Salt Lake City, Brigham Young said, quote, "The devil told the truth. I do not blame Mother Eve for eating the forbidden fruit. I would not have had her miss eating that for anything. That's how we become gods." Here is a church that claims to be the true Christian church that is founded upon a belief that Satan told the truth when he lied, when he offered godhood to the human race. And there is not a god in Mormonism, although there are trillions of gods, because all Mormon gods are white magicians. There is not creation or creator in Mormonism, but matter and intelligence always existed. And the Mormon gods are beings, intelligences that became aware of a cosmic force, and the force without a creator, laws without a lawgiver governing it, and through ascending through higher and higher levels of initiation, they became the masters of this force. And they became capable of manufacturing out of material at hand, not creating out of nothing, new worlds and new universes. There is no true God. And as you know, in evolution, there is no creator. And there is no creation. And we are it. And there is just this Star Wars force that is somehow pushing us upward, 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 upward. And some very intelligent people believe that. Here is Brian O'Leary, another ex-astronaut. He talked about his journey to inner space. Co-evolution quarterly. That has nothing to do with science, folks. It has nothing to do with fossil evidence. It is all about how we are taking a hand in our own evolution through mystical practices, and we are going to take that next quantum leap. I picked this up in Dallas at the First Church of Religious Science. They were teaching, I'm trying to show you that evolution comes from mysticism, okay? They were teaching Hatha Yoga. Now, this is relatively new in America. 20 years ago, it was not so. But today in America, you would be hard-pressed, traveling across this country, to find one out of the 2,000 YMCAs and YWCAs that now does not teach yoga. Okay? Young Men's Christian Association, all teaching yoga, which is at the heart of Hinduism. And the goal of yoga is to awaken the Kundalini, which is a goddess, that's Eve, in the form of a serpent. That's the serpent, coiled at the base of the spine. And when you reach that state of consciousness, it springs up and manifests itself through the chakras, the meridians, in which they stick the acupuncture needles, which has also become very popular in America now, manifests itself in psychic powers, okay? Santa Monica Hospital, over where I come from, on the other side of L.A., one of our top hospitals in Southern California, has had courses in Kundalini yoga for registered nurses, for which they received 11 hours continuing education credit from the California Association of Registered Nurses. It is pure Hinduism, pure occultism, okay? But at the heart of it is evolution, the subject that you folks study. And you cannot talk about Hatha yoga. Oh, that's just the physical side of the thing. You cannot separate the physical side from the philosophy behind it, because all of the positions, all of the breathing exercises have all been specifically designed to put you in that state of consciousness of union, which is what yoga means, yoking you with Brahman, the absolute, and you become one with this universe. Okay? So now they're teaching this in a Church of Religious Science, and listen to what they say. Hatha yoga is the yoga of what we think of as physical exercise through a series of postures known as asanas. There are 84 asanas that originated in the beginning teachings of the science of Hatha Yoga, symbolizing the evolution of 8,400,000 species through which the soul incarnated to reach the level of a human being. Hey, Darwin didn't make that up. Lamarck didn't discover this. This has been in yoga for thousands of years. And the 84 positions symbolize the 84,000 species through which we have all evolved to get to where we are. Okay, don't tell me this is something that some scientist has come up with. The scientists are trying desperately to find evidence to support it, because that means they don't have to be accountable to the Creator, and indeed, they're part of this mystical journey upward to Godhood. Other people who teach this is, of course, Mind and Supermind, Expanding the Limits of Consciousness. It's a series that they have at the, the Community College in Santa Barbara. It's an ongoing series for many years. The Evolutionary Journey, this is Barbara Marks Hubbard, The Evolutionary Journey, A Personal Guide to a Positive Future. They are all talking about the evolution of the species. The Bond of Power by Joseph Chilton Pierce, forward by Stanislav Grof. It's all about how we accelerate the evolution of the species through mystical practices. Scientism, evolution, mysticism. Evolution does not come out of science. Evolution comes from the same place that science came from. That's mysticism, alchemy, and astrology. It's not scientific. It's something that these people have adopted in order to reach the next level, to keep progressing higher and higher and higher on the evolutionary scale. And I think that you people need to recognize that. I think that evolution needs to be combated in our schools, not just as bad science, or to say that creationism is just as good science, but it ought to be combated as the religion that it is. And we ought to point out where its roots are, and that evolution is not a scientific theory that some scientist discovered, but that evolution has been at the heart of the reincarnation process, driven on by this law of karma to ever higher and higher heights, and it really ought to be dealt with on that basis.
Now, this ended the formal program. We're going to include some questions from the audience, which David answers, the first one dealing with hypnotic regression.
He is a psychiatrist with the Columbia University School of Psychiatry. I'll think of his name in a moment, but who went through a number of years of therapy and who ended up worse than when he began. And when he confronted his therapist, the therapist said, well, of course, therapy would create neuroses in any normal person. And this man with an MD, a psychiatrist, said that he finally came to the conclusion that the memories are not uncovered by this process. They are created by this process. And another person, more apropos to what you're talking about, said that this whole thing of symbolism Karl Popper, probably one of the top, if not the most highly regarded philosopher of science today, who says that science can't arrive at truth at all. We can just get a better theory, try to get a better theory. But Karl Popper says psychology and psychotherapy are more like astrology than astronomy. They have no relation to science at all. And I can't think of the name of another psychiatrist himself writing in this area who says that this process of interpreting symbols and dreams and language symbols and so forth, he says it's a game at which the therapist can't lose, because nobody can tell you what this stuff means. So I don't accept this idea that somewhere back in the depths of our language there is an explanation for these things, because anything that comes out under hypnosis under altered states of consciousness and so forth is just you're pulling things out of the grab. Well, it's worse than pulling it out of the grab bag. There's demonic deception that's involved at the same time. I've interviewed too many people around the world, independently of one another, who have had common experiences. Okay. Well, let me just finish now. Let me finish. Whether on drugs, whether in yoga, transcendental meditation, under hypnosis, and I will say this, the same message comes through every time. Whether it is an automatic writing from alleged space brothers and UFOs, or whether it's from Aunt Mary who died 14 years ago through a medium, or whatever it is, and that message has four common denominators, okay? And they conform precisely to what the Bible tells us Satan destroyed the human race with in the Garden of Eden. Now, the four lies are that God is not personal but a force. Number two, there is no death. You won't die. Number three, you can become a god. Number four, the secret is the secret gnosis, the knowledge of good and evil, this tree. You have to be initiated into the secret knowledge and expand your awareness. And when you understand who you really are, then you're on the way to Godhood, you see. Now, I could give you the mathematics, just work out the mathematics, that thousands of people all over the world are going to come up with the same message over and over and over that the Bible identifies as originating with the serpent. So I don't have to be too bright to say something's going on. You walk across the ground with a dowsing rod. We have discovered over 500,000 wells in America this way. It's got to be good. It's got to be from God. I mean, General Patton, he even had thrown in a whole tree for his dowser out there in the Sahara Desert, and he found water so the American troops wouldn't die. And in the Vietnam War, some of our Marines using dowsing rods made out of coat hangers or any other material that came to hand. See, we used to try to say, well, there's some kind of an attraction between the moisture in the twig and the moisture in the ground, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they located underground Viet Cong hideouts and ammunition caches. We have dowsers dousing from airplanes who locate oil and minerals. But we also have dowsers who will douse with a pendulum over a map. And they are the best people for locating sites for archaeologists to drill to find ancient civilizations. And they just found Cleopatra's tomb and the old city of Alexandria off the coast of Egypt by this means, okay? Now, you can't tell me this is some kind of a force. Information is being communicated. You're either going to have to decide we are all part of this collective mind and we are all God, or there are other minds out there and they are playing games and they are deceiving man as to the nature of reality, the nature of the universe, and who God is, and the means of salvation, and that message comes through over and over and over, and that's why I say it's demonic. Evolution was there before the New Age movement began. It was brought into our schools and brought into our society as science, because that's the way we would accept it. All ritual, I don't care whether it's, you know, whether it's Eastern Orthodox or Greek Orthodox or whatever it is, all ritual comes from exactly what Robert Jastrow said the scientists can't handle. The scientists say that every event is the result of a prior event, cause and effect, you see. And ritual is an attempt to tie God into this universe in a cause and effect relationship. In the occult, we call it the magician's bargain. You get a story about it in the opera Faust, where Dr. Faust sells his soul to Mephistopheles, the little devil, who, by the way, looks very much like Yoda in the Empire Strikes Back. And it's called the magician's bargain. And when you have been initiated into the secret gnosis, then you know the formulas. See, when the witch doctor slits the rooster's throat and he sprinkles the blood in a pattern and he mumbles a formula, the gods or spirits or whoever it is has to come through because they're tied in a cause and effect relationship. That's exactly what Mary Baker Eddy did. She turned Jesus into a scientist, and she said everything goes by law, and when you understand these laws and scientifically apply them, then it comes through automatically. You see, so all ritual is based upon this belief that with certain symbols or certain formulas, spoken words that we speak, thoughts we think, visual images that we hold, we thereby trigger something. But of course, you know the problem with that is, you see, the skeptic says to us as Christians, well, you only believe in God because science hasn't yet explained everything. But one day, science will explain everything, and then you don't need God anymore. Well, of course, you got two basic problems. If science explains everything, then everything is part of this ball of wax, which is under the second law of thermodynamics, which is running down like a clock and heading for destruction. Also, if everything is explicable in scientific terms, then for me to say to my wife, I love you, is no more meaningful than to say I have a gastrointestinal pain. Because love itself would have to be the result of natural processes governed by scientifically explicable laws and would therefore be meaningless, you see? So as soon as I get into a position where certain symbols or certain rituals elicit a certain response, I have to come to God on bended knee as a repentant sinner. I have no demands that I can make. Whatever he's going to give me will be by grace. It will be a gift that I cannot earn, that I cannot merit by ritual or by any other way, you see? So what psychology is trying to do is, like B.F. Skinner, for example. I'm talking too long, I'm sorry. Other people want to ask questions. But like B.F. Skinner in Walden 2, you know, he's building his paradise. And he has Frazier, his alter ego, says to his guest, well, we're not interested in improving the human race. What we're interested in is finding a science of human behavior. And then he gets a little upset. He says, but you can't have a science when the subject of your experiment is hopping about capriciously with a free will. You see? So that's why B.F. Skinner has to do away with free will. And let me tell you this. We have people in the Church of Jesus Christ who have tried to do the same thing to God that B.F. Skinner did to man. Destroyed his initiative. So that if we say certain words or we think certain thoughts, or we visualize certain images, then he's got to come through. And the whole thing now is another Christian science. It's religious science. It's the worst thing you can do with religion is to make it scientific.
Well, that brings this program to a conclusion. We hope you've enjoyed it. We'd like you to remind you, if you'd like other teaching materials of this nature, to write to us at the address on the back of this tape. Have a great day in Jesus Christ. Thank you.